works. Good time to start thinking about the final projects. Maybe a good idea to have a topic picked out by early March so that you'll have time to write the thing. The other thing was that I was considering moving the presentations that people would give on this project from April 3rd to April 10th. Give everyone another week to do that. But I was concerned that it might conflict with final exams or something else in that period. So not a final decision yet. Let me know how you feel about that. And I'll figure it out for the next couple of weeks. Yeah?
How many people are registered?
Well, so I don't know what the registrar says, but I've been getting 8 problem sets. So there's a couple of people who aren't here because they're watching from Toronto. We have one who's actually come from Toronto today, but watches recordings on alternate weeks. So that's including those people. OK, so back to fault tolerance. And specifically, back to transversal gates. So so as I said, transversal gates automatically satisfy this first property, kind of trivially by construction. But the second property, well, you have to kind of define what gates are supposed to be doing before you can see whether or not they can satisfy that. So let's look at some specific examples. But to do that, let me just define a little bit of terminology first. I'm going to put this up here when I talk about transversal gates. So when I say a transversal U, I'm talking about physical U's. So this is U tensor N, a physical U on each qubit. Or if U is a 2-qubit gate like control knot, that means on corresponding qubits in different blocks. Okay? Whereas if I say U can be implemented transversally, or something that sounds like that, then I'm talking about the logical U. It means I have some transversal gate that does the logical U. And it does not require that physical U's be involved in this, physical U operations be involved in this gate at all. Doesn't even have to be the same thing on every qubit. All I care about for this kind of statement is that it actually is transversal, according to the definition I have found. Okay? So we've actually already seen an example of specific transversal gates. And that's the logical polygroup for a stabilizer code. So what did we say before? We said that if we looked at this, the things that commute with S and mod out S, then that was isomorphic to the encoded polygroup, the logical polygroup. Which means that if we take something from N of S, well, that's a poly operator itself. It's a tensor product of single qubit operations. And if you implement it on a state, well, it will be a logical poly operator, right? So in particular, there's things that are logical X or the logical Z that can just be implemented transversely as a product of poly elements. So for a more specific example, we could take, say, 7-qubit code, which has this stabilizer. And so what are the logical operations for the 7-qubit code? Well, I'll try to write them here, so it's more transparent. Well, yeah, I will write them here. So we need a logical x and a logical z. And one thing we could pick for logical x would be just 7 x's. I forget if I mentioned these before. But 7 x's, see, that commutes. Well, it certainly commutes with these three generators, right, because they're all x's anyway. But it also commutes with these, because each of these has weight 4. And similarly, 7 z's for the logical z. These two things anti-commute with each other, so that's OK. That one of them can be the logical x, one can be the logical z. OK? So these are both in N of s. And they're, I mean, it's maybe slightly less obvious, but there are different cosets of s in N of s. Because they, well, the anti-commute that tells you that. OK, so to do then a logical x on, so we use logical x on 7-qubit code, we just do the transversal x, right? And as I said, by that I mean x on each qubit. But it didn't have to be that, because this is a coset. So we could take some other element of the coset. Right? So for instance, we could take this times this, right, which is just x on qubits 5, 6, and 7. Or any even number of things. Okay, so there's lots of different ways to do that. And anything in that coset is going to be a tensor product deployment, so it's a transversal implementation. Similarly for logical z and logical y. And this is true for any stabilizer code, right? Because the same logic applies. Okay? Okay, so now let's do something more interesting. So if you look at this stabilizer, well, one thing that leaps out at you is that it's symmetric on the top half and the bottom half, right? The x's and the z's are the same. And what that suggests is that if we do a transversal Hadamard gate, that we'll get something sensible, right? Because if we do a Hadamard, it'll take all these x's to z's, which is just this generator, and these x's to these z's, and so on. And these z's go up to these x's. So the transversal Hadamard swaps the first three generators with the second three generators. And therefore gives us some kind of fault tolerant and particular transversal encoded operation. So how do you figure out what it is? Well, the way to figure out what it is to look at the x bar and the z bar operator, right? This is just a Clifford group thing. So this is, now we're seeing the power of all this Clifford group manipulation stuff we did, well, a couple of weeks ago anyway. So we'll look at what x bar goes to. So x bar goes to, well, the 6x, the 7x's go to 7z's. Which we can just immediately identify as the original z bar. And z bar similarly goes to x bar. Well, what operation, what logical operation, switches the logical x and the logical z? It's a logical Hadamard. So, the Hadamard can be implemented transversally as a transversal Hadamard. Seems sensible. So maybe this is a good time to pause and think about that gate property too. Now that we have some non-trivial gate that actually does some non-trivial gate, let's see if gate property 2 is satisfied. Well, so certainly in the case where there are no errors, you know, R and S are both 0, this certainly works, right? Because that's kind of what we just showed. Okay? So 7-qubit code corrects one error, so we only have to consider the case of R plus S equals 1. If R equals 1 and S equals 0, so there's one error coming into it, well, then one of these qubits might get messed up. But that's okay. Because it's a transversal gate, there'll still only be that same qubit messed up later on. And the error-corrected code, the ideal decoder, will correct that. And we'll do, and so it either corrects it before the gate on the right-hand side or after the gate on the left-hand side. And it works just the same way. So that certainly works. So what about the case where there's an error during the gate? Well, now on the left-hand side, so over here, we have an error during the gate. And so this ideal decoder finds that error, corrects it, and gives us the correct state out. Over here, there's no error that goes into this ideal decoder, but it still gives us the correct state out. And then it does a Hadamard on it. Okay, so either way, you again get the same thing. Okay, so in general, it's true that for these transversal gates, it's just enough to look at what they do in the case where there are no errors. Okay, and then because they're transversal and the errors can't go anywhere, it'll automatically work in the case, you'll automatically satisfy gate property 2. Okay?
I mean, it seems obvious, but just wanted to make sure that the gate in the property 2 before the ideal decoder and after the ideal decoder are not the same optimal ideal.
Right. So the thing on the left hand side is the fault tolerant implementation of the gate. So in the case of this Hadamard, that's doing Hadamard in every qubit. The thing on the right hand side, that's the ideal gate. So that's just the Hadamard itself, the single qubit Hadamard applied to the decoded qubit. Okay, so they're not the same, but they're supposed to correspond. Other questions? And I guess the main point is that the correspondence doesn't change with different errors, so long as it satisfies the right constraint. Other questions? Okay, so moving on. So let's look at another gate. So this one's a little less obvious. So let's look at the pi over 4 rotation. So 0 goes to 0, 1 goes to i1. Well, so if we do that on every qubit, what happens? Well, the z's all go to themselves. So the z generators and change. What about the x generators? Well, for instance, x, goes to, well, what does R do? It takes x into y. This goes to y, So this you can immediately see is not one of the generators we have there. But we don't care if it's one of the generators. We care if it's in the stabilizer, right? Because since this is a unitary operation, it's always going to, so long as it takes all the generators to things that are in the stabilizer, it can't take two things to the same thing, so it's just going to permute elements in the stabilizer. And in fact, it is in the stabilizer. That's pretty easy to see, right? Because, well, so if we take x, 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 I, and multiply it by the corresponding z thing. Well, x times z, well, it's not y, actually. There's a factor of y is I, x, z. So you get I, but you get four I's. So it's I to the fourth, which is 1. Probably didn't need to say that. And so in fact, this is equal to the product of these two generators. And it's in the stable estimate. Okay. And it really is important to keep track of these factors of I, because if it had been a factor of, well, you can't get a factor of I overall, but you could have gotten a factor of minus 1, in which case it wouldn't be in the stable estimate. In that case, you might still be able to fix it up by doing, you know, these transversal R's and then some poly to change to fix the minus sign. But you got to pay attention to these things, because otherwise you won't get the right gate. Okay. So this is the first generator, the first X generator, and similarly for the other two X generators. So this is, again, a valid transversal gate. So what does it do on what logical operation does it do? Well, same idea. We look at x bar and z bar. So z bar really just goes to itself, because z goes to z. And x bar goes to 7 y's. Okay, so you say, great. Well, 7 y's is the product of 7 x's and 7 z's, right? But remember this factor of I. So it's actually I to the 7th times 7 x's times 7 z's. Which is minus, well, okay. So minus I times x bar z bar. Right? And the logical y is I x bar times z bar. So this is minus the logical y. So this doesn't take x bar to y bar, it takes x bar to minus y bar. So it doesn't do the valid, it doesn't, sorry, it's a valid gate, but it doesn't do the logical r. It does the logical r inverse. And of course, if you can easily see that if you want to do the logical r, you should do the transversal r inverse. Okay? Yeah.
I could have chosen my x bar to be, for example, the first four x's, right?
Not the first four x's. No, that's in the stable estimate.
That is in the stable.
But you could have, as I said, the last three x's.
Right, but that is.
Oh, I see. Yeah, okay. That's right. So in fact, you can kind of see that all the possible implementations are going to have 3 mod 4 x's in them for exactly this reason. Other questions? Okay. What else do I do? Okay. So the natural thing to think of after we've done H and R is to try to complete the Clifford group with a C naught. Okay, well, what happens when you do a transversal C naught? Well, so first of all, now we're dealing with two blocks of the code. So what is the stabilizer? Well, the stabilizer is these things tensor the identity, and identity tensor these things, right? So that's this stabilizer on the first block, and another copy of the stabilizer on the second block. Okay, so what do we get? Well, we have things like the four X's, tensor, 7 identities. And what does a transversal CNOT do? Well, it's interacting the first qubit here with the first qubit here, and the second qubit with the second qubit, and so on. So it's taking XI to XX. So what we're going to get is this tensor itself. And this, we can see, is in the stabilizer of two copies of the code, right? Because it's a product of one of those things, tensor I, with I tensor one of those things. Okay? And similarly for the other generators. There's obviously different ways this could work out. So we have things of this form, an I tensor X generator, and those will go to I tensor X. And this could be taken schematically. And of course, Z tensor I schematically goes to things in the form Z tensor I. And the other interesting one is things of this form. Which, of course, will get copied. You get two copies of the same thing backwards, going backwards along the CNOT. Again, in the stabilizer. Any question?
Yeah, well, it's kind of a little bit unrelated. Maybe you can finish with that.
Okay. Okay, good. Okay, so this tells us that a conversal CNOT is another valid encoded gate. And again, the same argument will tell us what gate it is. Since X bar is a product of X's, X bar tensor I, or I bar, is going to get mapped to X bar tensor X bar, right? And Z bar tensor I to Z bar tensor I tensor X, I tensor X bar, and I tensor Z bar to Z bar tensor Z bar. So that's a logical control knot. And actually, you can see that this logic didn't really depend for this controlled knot. This logic didn't depend on the 7-qubit code specifically. All that was necessary was that some of the generators were just X's, and some of them were just Z's. And that's true for any CSS code. In fact, that's really what a CSS code is. So for any CSS code, transversal CNOT is a valid gate. And you can always, in fact, choose the X bars and Z bars to be tensor products of X's and Z's, in which case the transversal CNOT does the logical CNOT. And this is maybe the closest I'll get to answering Martin's earlier question. So this is an example of a case. If you have a CSS code encoding multiple qubits, then you can do the transversal CNOT between two blocks of this code. And it'll do the logical CNOT between all the encoded qubits. So what I mean by that is the logical first qubit to the logical first qubit, and so on. Okay. So this is a case where there's not really any harm in having multiple encoded qubits. You're just doing a bunch of, you just kind of replace the single CNOT with multiple logical CNOTs. Okay? Yeah.
Well, again, my question is kind of twofold. Could you, so you know, if we forget about encoding, just one qubit, you can define the CNOT being sort of the projector on zero tensor identity plus projector on one tensor X.
Mm-hmm.
Could you take that definition and just say, well, then just put a bar on top of everything and that's my CNOT?
That's your logical CNOT?
Yeah.
Well, yes, but that doesn't really answer the question of fault tolerance. How do you implement that gate?
Yeah, but like, even forgetting fault tolerance, but that's like just in
Because,
error correction sense.
Because the X bar does the X on the encoded qubit, and it doesn't do anything else in the case where there are no errors.
So here's my second question now is, so in stabilizer code, we work only with the stabilizer, right? We don't really work with the encoded states. So what is the encoded state?
Well, you can, so you're allowed to work.
No, you're allowed to, but I mean, like, we haven't touched that subject too much. So in case of a qubit, we know that the state zero, which is just identity plus a Z gate. It's I plus Z is equal to the Is that, is that the same thing when you work with encoded?
Well, so the encoding zero is the plus one eigenstate of Z bar. Right, so I plus Z bar is not exactly a projection on the encoded zero state because there's the rest of the code. But if you're already in the code, then I plus Z bar is a projection on the zero state. So if you first project on the code and then project it, then you're okay. Yeah.
Where we seem to have a generic decoder group here. Where does this fall apart? In terms of
doing more gates.
Yeah.
Well, so you remember that I showed you back when we were doing Clifford group manipulations that you could efficiently simulate the Clifford group. So that is telling you that Clifford group itself is not universal. And unfortunately, it falls apart right here. So I guess maybe just to connect the dots here, since we have a set of generators of the Clifford group, and since we've agreed before that we could multiply together two transversal gates and still get a valid transversal gate, that means that we can multiply these things together and do any Clifford group operation transversally for the 7-qubit code. Okay? But unfortunately, that's all we can do for the 7-qubit code. Which is, I say all we can do, but actually that's very good. I mean, the 7-qubit code, you can do a lot more than most codes. So that is a reason actually 7-qubit code is very good for fault tolerance, because you can do all these Clifford group gates. For some other codes, you can't do nearly as much. Okay, so maybe in the remaining time, I'll give an example of that.
I might have another quick one.
Yeah.
Is the logical CNOT uniquely defined, or you kind of have a freedom to choosing it?
The logical CNOT, so certainly it's not completely uniquely defined, because you can always multiply by elements of the stabilizer, which do nothing, right? So there's always that ambiguity. I don't offhand know if there's some other kind of natural ambiguity that you could throw in. Here's one example of something you can't do. Okay, you might think, well, the X bar is only on the last three qubits, right? You could also take a Z bar only on the last three qubits. So you might say, well, I only have to do control not on the last three qubits. But that does not work, because the stabilizer doesn't get copied. Stabilizer gets broken up. Okay, so I don't know, I don't really know the answer to your question, but it's nothing really obvious. Okay, so let me show you another example where you can't do nearly as many gates. So that's the 5-qubit code, right? You might say, well, why is 7-qubit so great for fault tolerance? I mean, while sure you can do a lot of transversal gates, it has 7 qubits. When we know a more efficient code, 5 qubits, right? That could be better. So let's think about the 5-qubit code. So for 5-qubit code, what's the stabilizer? Well, you'll notice I never have to consult my notes when I write up these stabilizers. For the 5 and 7-qubit code, I write them up so often. Okay. So I, again, don't remember whether I said what the logical X bar and Z bar are. But in this case, we can again choose them. The transversal X and transversal Z. So suppose we try to do the transversal C naught on the 5-qubit code. Well, you would take something, for instance, we take the first generator, and that would get, so tensor 5 odds. And what would that get mapped to? Well, the x's get copied forward, but the z's don't. So we get x, z, z, x, I, tensor x, I, x, I. Okay? And whereas this is in a stabilizer, this is not. Right? So what that means is that this is not a valid transversal operation. Okay. So that's kind of disappointing. That's why 7-qubit code is better in a lot of ways than the 5-qubit code when you talk about fault tolerance. But it's not totally hopeless for the 5-qubit code. There are some other gates we can do.
But so this doesn't mean that you cannot find a transversal.
Well, it means I can't do a transversal of the whole. Oh, yeah. So there could be another gate that does a transversal, a logical C naught.
Yeah.
That's true. Unfortunately, there isn't. But yeah, you might hope that.
How do you go about doing that?
Yeah, pretty much. So it's actually not so hard to prove that there's no two-block transversal. So there's no 2-qubit gate that you can apply transversally on the 5-qubit code. I think that's reasonably easy to prove. So it turns out there's a lot of mathematical structure in this case that tells you things about the code. Yeah, I mean, so it depends what exactly your rules are for what you allow. So there is actually a 3-qubit thing that does a logical 3-qubit gate. And things for more and more qubits. And you might imagine that by multiplying those together in some way, you get something that does a C naught on 2 blocks and then some other complicated gate. Tensor, some other complicated gate than the others. And I wouldn't know offhand how to prove that that doesn't happen. But I'm pretty sure it doesn't. But there's also a 1-qubit gate. And actually, that's what I want to show you, just to give you an experience of a more exotic fault tolerance. And so that's what I call the T gate. So what does the T gate do? The T gate is a Clifford group gate that takes X to Y, and it takes Y to Z. And so if you work out what that means for Z, it takes Z to X. Okay, so it's a 3-cycle among as a permutation of X, Y, and Z. So what does that do to the 5-qubit code? Well, let's look at the first generator. So the transversal T so it takes X, Z, Z, X, I. Well, going around the cycle, we get y, x, x, y, I. So again, not a generator, but we can write it as a product of generators. And so specifically, if you take this and this, so x, I, x, z, z, XCXIXC. So the z's here cancel, you get x in the middle here, and then the y is a little more complicated. So you get xz is going to be minus iy, and zx is plus iy. So you get minus I times plus I is 1, yxxy. Okay? And actually, you can save some time because this code is invariant under cyclic rotations. So you know that the other generators must also be unstable. Okay? And you can see right away that x bar gets mapped to 5y's, which is clearly equal to x bar times, I to the fifth, x bar times z bar, which is luckily I again. So this is y bar. And z bar gets mapped to 5x's, which is, of course, just x bar. So this is doing a logical cheat. Okay? So questions about that? Okay, so on the problem set, there's some more exercises with finding transversal gates for certain codes, for the distance two codes and for one of the polynomial codes. But basically, we've kind of reached the limit of what we can do with transversal gates. So in order to get a universal set of gates, we're going to have to go further. And of course, a fault-tolerant computation is going to need more parts than just fault-tolerant gates. So since there's a few minutes left, I'll just kind of give you a list of what parts we're going to need in order to have a fault-tolerant protocol. So we might as well start at the beginning. Well, what happens at the very beginning of a fault-tolerant protocol? We have to create some encoded state to work on, right? So we could think of a fault-tolerant protocol as having no quantum input, because if it's giving us as an unencoded state, well, it could have errors on it before we even get a chance to encode it. So that's kind of hopeless. But we'll start with encoded zero states. So we need fault-tolerant state preparation. And certainly we need the encoded zero states, but actually there's a lot of these other fault-tolerant objects will require other encoded ancilla states. And so we'll need state preparation procedures for those.
Can't you in general get those from zero and encoded gates?
Well, yes and no. If you had a universal set of encoded gates, you would. But unfortunately, when we do, say, 7-qubit code, we only have transversal Clifford group gates. And so the ancillas we're going to need are going to be non-Clifford group gates. And so in fact, to get the universal set of fault-tolerant gates, we're going to create special encoded ancillas and use them to get the extra gates, rather than going the other way around. So but that is the second piece. We want to get gates. And of course, they should be fault-tolerant. Well, and so once we're doing this computation, we're going to have to stop occasionally, as I said, to do error correction, because we don't want the errors building up all along the course of the computation. So we're going to need some way of doing error correction in a way that itself doesn't introduce extra errors, or at least corrects errors more than it introduces. So we're going to need some kind of fault-tolerant error correction. And then finally, to end the computation, we're going to want to make a measurement and get classical bits out. And maybe we're going to need those measurements in the middle of the computation also to help us with these other parts. So as you can see, we still have some work left to do. So far, we've only done part of two, and we've done the easy part of two. All these other things are going to be more complicated than these transversal gates. And so next lecture, I'm going to tell you how to do that. And depending how long it takes, maybe the lecture after that as well. OK? So other questions? Then class dismissed.